Well, hello everyone. My name is Jack. I'm an alcoholic. Hi guys. Whew. So 45 minutes. I think we should just do a 20-minute meditation. What do you guys think? We'll just sit quietly. That'll be entertaining. Okay, I'll talk. Thanks for having me. Thanks for asking me, Mark. I appreciate it. Thanks, Roberto, for coming up with me, and it was great to hear you. And it's good to see everybody, and welcome to those who are counting days or raising your hand or suffering with time. You know? One of the things that I really like to mention when I talk is the fact that right now, in this moment, right here, at this very second, I'm not suffering. I'm not suffering right now. Whew, that's a giant relief. You know, I used to suffer all the time. There wasn't a time when I wasn't suffering. I mean, before I got sober, I walked around in pain all the time. Or in anxiety, or fear, or ego, or judgment, or I just walked around all the time in this state of unease. I just didn't feel good. I just didn't feel good all the time. I was always, you know, afraid of something that might happen, or pissed off about something that just happened, or whatever else. I just was never good. I just... Man, getting sober and being able to say that I'm not suffering right now, I mean, that alone is just such a huge gift. I've really gotten to understand the value of being okay right now, no matter what's going on. It's a big deal for me. Because, you know, before, I had no solution for life other than getting loaded. You know? Yeah, like so many of us, I just felt alone and afraid my whole life when I was young. You know, I just felt alone and afraid. I felt separate. Like, there was you over there and me over here, and I'm alone. And the world's out to get me. And I need to strive, to struggle, to fight, to protect myself. I was basically raised an only child. I have a half brother and half sister that are much older than me. And my father left when I was very young, so I was basically raised by my mom. And I was left alone a lot. And so all the way up until junior high, I was kind of going to school by myself. And I got picked on a lot when I was a kid. So I was always afraid. I got beat up all the time. And I was always like, you know, jumping through bushes or looking around buildings to make sure that I could scamper home. And I knew that I couldn't trust anybody because people left. You know, my dad left when I was really young, and then my brother and sister, they were really involved in my life when I was young. But by the time, you know, I was old enough to really know what was going on, they were married and out of the house. So they left too. And I knew that I had to do everything by myself. And my mother was a very self-sufficient person. She was very industrious and smart, and made it her mission to make sure that I got a really good life. And then she also had some, you know, a couple divorces, and I don't think that she really wanted to depend on anyone. And so she kind of instilled that in me too. You know, you gotta take care of business. And it was a huge burden, you know, for a kid. I thought my mom was really cool, you know. She kept a bottle of gin in the cupboard just in case somebody wanted a martini, you know. And she smoked cigarettes. And I remember coming home one day from school, and I wanted to kind of be like my mom. And I reached up into that cupboard and, like, poured some gin and got a cigarette and pretended like I was cool, like my mom, you know. And that was my first drink that I remember. I think that my brother fed me some beer when I was a kid and spun me around to see if I would puke. He also blew pot smoke in my face when I was a kid a lot. But this is my first drink on my own, you know. And my first drink on my own was very much like my last drink, which was, you know, I was home alone drinking and I was about to lie about it. that was kind of bookends my drinking. Because my mother came home and was like, what was up? And I lied, you know, and that started this whole pattern of being very sneaky, sneaking around so that I could drink and get loaded the way that I want to, you know. I was born in Oakland. I grew up in the East Bay. By the time I was like 12, 13, when I had that first drink, my mother had gotten a much better job. She moved us into this really nice neighborhood. And up the street, there was this family. There was three boys and their father. Their names were Daryl, Derek, and Darren. And their father was Daryl. And they had a boat in the yard. And, you know, I think he was a meth manufacturer by trade. But they always had really nice stuff. And those boys, they used to pick on me when I was younger. But when I started getting loaded with them, those guys became my friends. And we would stay up for days, we would drink our faces off, and we'd pretend like we were little gangsters, you know. And I'd go out and do that at night, and then when I come home, I'd be a good boy for my mom, because I didn't want her to leave, like my dad did. I wanted to be a good kid for her, so I actually got pretty decent grades. I showed up, I did the things, and then I played this double life, you know. I was always the actor, trying to get people to like me, because I wanted, one of my other addictions is your approval. I wanted to make sure that you thought that I was good. Because I don't want you to leave. I started to associate getting loaded with camaraderie. Like, when I started getting partying with those guys became my crew. You know, those were my friends. We had each other's back after that. And so I associated getting loaded with, like, belonging and acceptance. And, like, almost like a family. I was like, oh, I'm gonna be good. You know, yeah, that feeling, I'm good. I'm going to be okay. Be okay. I think that that's one of the things that alcohol gave me right from the beginning. I'm going to be okay. Remember, you know, like the world slowed down a little bit when I was high or when I was drinking. It just slowed down. You know, both Roberto and I, like, we love cameras. You know, it's like the world came into focus. It was tack sharp when I started drinking. It's like everything slowed down and I was going to be fine. I could be in the moment. I could be with me. It's one of the things I really hated about meditation at the very beginning when I first started doing it. Was like, I hated sitting with me. It's painful. I don't like being alone with this. That's a tough place to be sometimes. You know, and alcohol gave me that thing of just like, I'm good. I'm good. I'm going to be fine. Everything looks beautiful. The world changed. The world changed. Like, it became okay for me to be in it. I, like, stepped into this new place where the music was all in tune and the colors were perfect and everything was in focus and my mind was quiet and I could look you in the eye. I was going to be okay. Because I could get, I got my medicine with me. Got my flasks, I got my whatever else, like, you know, razor blades and straws and pipes and lighters and plastic bags and scales and shakers and little, you know, I love all of the ritual around all the things. You know, I love chopping things and burning things and grinding them, you know. Ooh, yeah, mixing, all the things, I love it, man. Yes, my stuff, it's like an Erector set. Just gonna play with my Legos, scrape some stuff, burn it. Ah, so much fun. I loved it. I loved it. The ritual of it is just so delicious. It's like the top of a roller coaster. We're going in. Yes. Here we go. Ooh, just knowing I was gonna get off work and go have a drink. Oh, yeah. Beautiful day. Oh, baby, it's almost time. Woo! Just, scrounging to get to the hookup just so that I can get the bag. I'm in the car just like, yeah, we're going. So good. Oh, my God. Filled my soul with happiness. Just knowing that I was going to get there. So good. Oh, my gosh. Love it. I absolutely love it. I had a romantic relationship with all of that stuff. Like, I was in love with it. I was in love with, you know, Jim, Jack, and Johnny and all my friends, you know. like the bottles and the, oh man, everything about it. I was, mwah, I loved it. I love dark bars. I love shady places. I love anything by the airport. And, strip clubs, nasty casinos, you know, toothless cowboys. Oh, my friends, I'm home. Sneaking down an alleyway to a shady motel. Yes. Ah, I love it, man. I used to love going to Vegas and going to Old Town Vegas and like playing single jack blackjack in some shady casino. It's like, it's the best. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I was in love with that whole thing. I love shady bars. I drank in bars for a very long time. I drank everywhere for an every. I woke up to cocktails, smoked my lunch, experimented with all kinds of like everything else. And I went to college in San Francisco. My girlfriend at the time was a comedian, and we would hang out in like comedy clubs and like go see shows, and it was great. I loved it. I loved it. It was so much fun. I had a great time. Oh man! Since I have some time, I will tell one story about one time when some friends of mine in college, they were like, "Yeah, we're gonna take acid," and I'm like, "Yeah!" And they put down this like thing on the table, and I just went like that, and it was like, "Dude, that was four hits. You weren't supposed to take the whole thing." And I was like, "Oh, okay, sorry." And then I went to a comedy club, and I sat in the very front row, and my girlfriend was gonna be on stage in like 15 minutes, and there was a guy who was in like an electric wheelchair. He was a comedian, and his first bit was, "My wheelchair's out of control, and I can't stop." And it felt like he was gonna run right over me, and I had a panic attack and screamed and started rolling around on the ground right in front of him. Because I thought he was like some giant mechanical man. Good times. I really enjoyed that. It was fun. I had a reputation after that of the guy that panicked. Yeah, there's endless amounts of those stories. Endless amounts. You know, it's just, I loved it. I loved it. You know, I moved down to Los Angeles with some friends of mine. We wanted to be in like the entertainment business, and things were good for a while. You know, when I first moved down to LA, and it was like, in my early 20s, for some reason I was able to like walk into a room and convince some people that I was worthy of getting a job. And things were cool for a while, you know, which was good and bad for me because it gave me money and time and it fed my ego. And I was like, yeah, of course everything works out for me, you know. I also had a lot of time on my hands, and so it gave me the ability to just drink the way I wanted to. And my ego is a very complex thing. It thinks that I'm the best person in the world and a pile of crap all at the same time. So I have this seesaw thing happening in my head of like, I gotta be good because I know I'm the best, and you guys, and I just always had this turmoil in myself all the time, and the only thing that would fix it was a drink. And so I had to have it with me all the time. You know, and like I said, things were going good for a while, and then slowly, 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 things just started to go wrong. I needed more and more just to get to the place where I needed to be so that I could show up, you know. And of course, my ego felt like, oh, I'll tell you one other quick story. My ego let me think that I could just do whatever I wanted to, you know. Oh, man. Yeah, I showed up one day, first thing in the morning at like 8:30, into the office of somebody who I was trying to get a job from, and I was wasted and belligerent that they weren't going to hire. What do you mean? They didn't hire me. They didn't know what they had. Screw those people. And then phone calls stopped coming. Nobody really wanted to talk to me anymore. And I had to get a job, and I started working in hotels, and then for some weird confluence of events, I got a job as like the front of I was a doorman at a hotel, and a guy came in and he started a bar there, and it became a pretty famous club at the time, and then I became the door guy with like the rope and the list. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, which was a perfect job for an alcoholic like me because I could drink the way I wanted to and people would fill my pockets with money and drugs and they would tell me how great I was all the time. It's like perfect for my ego. Like, yeah. Funny, as soon as I got fired from that job, nobody called me. I remember driving home one night, I had a Jack and Coke in the car, smoking a joint, driving up Sunset Boulevard. And I had the perfect alcoholic car, too. It was like this Toyota Tercel hatchback, the dirt brown one. And I had hit a pole, so there was a giant karate chop in the side of the car. And it always looked like it was turning left. You know, I was like, which was good because I had one eye closed most of the time. Trying to go up Sunset Boulevard, had one headlight. And I thought I was incognito. I was like, nobody's going to pull me over in this car. I'm just going to slide through the shadows and no one's going to see me. And I'm going up Sunset and there's a West Hollywood sheriff going the other way. And I see him as he goes by. And as he goes by, I could see the whites of his eyes looking at me. And I'm like, oh, no. And I look in the rearview mirror and I see him turning around. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to pull over. And because I knew I was busted, and I did. I pulled over. He pulls up right behind me, turns his lights on. And this kind of calm came over me. I was like, well, it's about time. He comes up to me, he looks in the window, and he's like, get out of the car. He handcuffs me, puts me in the back of his cruiser. He says, who do you think you are? You can just drive through here drunk? What do you think, you're a celebrity or something? Goes up into my car, starts rummaging around, pulls out the Jack and Coke, and he smells it. He's like, really? Puts that on the roof of my car, rummaging around, pulls out the joint I was smoking. He's like, really, this too, huh? Puts that on the roof of my car. And I'm in the cruiser, and the windows are rolled up, and I'm watching all this happen. I'm like, oh, man, this isn't looking good. And I knew it was a Friday, so I wasn't going to see a judge till Monday. That's what I heard anyway. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to find out what it's like to spend the weekend in jail. And then at that time, all of a sudden I hear these like clippity-clop of shoes coming up the sidewalk. And I look over and there's these two women and they're like in miniskirts with high heels and they're like running up the sidewalk, clippity-clopping and up there. They may have been working. I'm not sure. And they were frantic and pointing up the road, and they went to talk to the police officer, and they're like, over there, over there. And the police officer looks at them, and he looks at me, and he looks at them, and he looks at me, and he's like, goes over to the car, opens the door, unhandcuffs me. He says, go home, kid, it's your lucky day. Gets in his car and tears off. And so I go get my Jack and Coke, and the joint I was smoking and thinking, man, God wants me to be a drunk, I think, because I am bulletproof. I felt pretty entitled. And, yeah, I actually got let go from a DUI one other time because the guy found out which club I was working at and he wanted to take his wife there. He's like, can I get in there? He's like, yeah, go home. And that's a funny story, but hey, I'm not proud of the fact that I drove drunk every day for about 10 years. And I'm so blessed that I didn't hurt anybody or hurt myself. I've heard horror stories about people that have gone through that, and I'm just so lucky that that didn't happen to me. And it doesn't, it by no means do I forget that, of how blessed I am to be standing up here. Because I shouldn't be. That's another thing I have to remember all the time, too, is that I'm really not a great guy. You know, all those things that I did, Johnny Harris used to say this, man. He's like, I did those terrible things. That was me. Alcohol just gave me the ability not to care that I was doing those things. I need mine. I don't care what happens to you. I'll just drink it away. I would steal, I would lie, I would cheat, I would like steal from my employers. I mean, all the things. All the things. I was not a good dude. I just didn't care. I got mine. Sorry. So what finally happened for me was I got fired from that job. A relationship ended in a way that was violent on both sides. And I'm really not proud of that. And I ended up on my couch in Venice, not being able to move. You know, I went on like a year and a half run, spending every dime that I had ever earned. And I was drinking in the morning. I was drinking all the time. And I was pretty ashamed of myself. And I got to that point where I didn't want to talk to anybody. You know, I didn't want to look you in the eye. I didn't want to go out and get a job. I couldn't get a job. I know who I am. Why would you hire me? I hate me. I can't go out and sell myself or confidently fill out an application saying, yeah, you should hire this guy. I just knew I was nothing. Nothing. And the only thing that would quiet those voices in my head, which were very loud at that time, just telling me constantly, 24/7, that you're nothing. You're nothing. The only thing that would quiet it, even for a small amount of time, was a drink. And I would like shuffle off to the liquor store at 7 o'clock in the morning where the guy knew me. Because I went there almost every day. And he'd be like, oh, there's that dude again. You know, and I'd shuffle up with my hoodie on, and he'd immediately reach down for that little plastic bottle of vodka from the bottom shelf. And he'd slide it across, and I'd pay for it with change and fuzz that I had collected off the carpet. And there I was again. And I can remember, I mean, this sounds cheese, man, but I can remember begging myself not to do this anymore. Please, just don't do this anymore. I mean, I know what powerlessness is. When I first heard that word powerlessness in these rooms, I understood what it meant. Because my body and my mind and my voice was doing and saying things that I did not want it to do. As a matter of fact, I was begging it to stop, and I couldn't. I was on the couch going, don't get up now. Don't get up and go to the liquor store. My feet would just start walking. And then conversely, I would say, get up and go get a job. Do something, man. Get up. And I couldn't. I was just paralyzed. Because I couldn't go outside. And that's a scary place to be, man. That is a scary place to be. They call it the jumping off place or whatever. You know, that place where the quicksand is out everywhere. I can't step outside. I can't talk. The only person that's talking to me left is my mother, and she's about to give up. I was tens of thousands of dollars in debt. I had cases. I was 3 months behind on my rent. My landlord, who was very kind to me, was just about to say, hey, man, enough. Get out. And I shuffled into that liquor store one more day, and this is what really happened. And I, again, this is, sounds corny, but I walked out of that liquor store in the morning, and I came shuffling out, and there was this guy leaned up against a dumpster. And I looked down at this dude, and I looked right into his face, and I swear he looked just like me. And I was like, oh man, I'm that guy. And I'm this far away from being that guy. And I had the moment of clarity, or I woke up for a second, and I'm like, oh man, where am I? What are you doing? And I walked into my apartment, and my knees buckled, and I fell on the floor, and these like snot tears came flying out of my face, and I was just in a ball on the ground, just bawling my eyes out, and I looked up at the ceiling, and I said, God, you gotta help me. And I was like, I never say God. I'm not religion guy. I couldn't believe that those words were coming out of my mouth. It kind of shocked me. It's like, what are you doing? But I think when the chips are down, we all say God, you know? And I opened up to a buddy of mine that night named Chris that I went to college with. And I was like, hey, Chris, I'm desperate, man. I got to quit drinking or something. It's bad. I think I need to go to rehab. Or something. Can you help me? I'm desperate. I'll do anything. And he's like, no, don't go to rehab. Call my friend Doug. He's in AA. And I'm like, nope, I'm not going to do that. I mean, I said I was desperate, but let's not get crazy. He's like, this guy's serious, man. He's very open about his sobriety. And he said that if anybody needs help ever, just give him my number. And I waited some time. That makes me cry. Because if he hadn't have done that to a guy who's not even sober, he was just open about his sobriety. He was just like, if anybody needs help, tell him to call me. Why would you do that? I still don't do that. If I'm not in a meeting. But he did it. I waited a couple weeks. I called that guy. He picked up the phone right away. He's like, hey, man, I've been expecting your call. What? He's like, yeah, this is Chris's friend, right? I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah, this is weird, dude. I just happen to be driving by Venice right now. Why don't you meet me right now? And I'm like, right now? He's like, yeah. I was like, well, I'm not prepared to meet anyone right now. I'm not dressed. He's like, listen, man, I'm getting off the freeway. There's a Carl's Jr. on Sepulveda and Venice Boulevard. Meet me there right now. He kind of hung up the phone. And so there I was with this choice. So I got on my motorcycle, which was uninsured, unregistered, and had half-inflated tires with spider webs on it. And I putted down Venice Boulevard, and I pulled into the parking lot, and I walked in, and he's like, hey, man, come on in, sit down. And in my head, I'm like, how does he know it's me? I've never seen this dude before. He's like, no, sit down, man. He's like, look, dude, I've been sober for 19 years. I know exactly what you're going through, and if you do what I say, I promise you'll feel better. And I was like, what? You promise? He's like, yeah, I guarantee it. It's like, whoa, you guarantee it? How is that possible? You don't know me. You don't know what kind of pain I'm in. I have to drink. There's no solution for this. You don't know how long I've been trying to quit. I mean, I went to doctors. I white-knuckled it. I tried all the things. He's like, no, I promise you. I guarantee it. I was like, really? He's like, yeah. And I made him promise. He reminds me of this all the time. That guy's still my sponsor today, by the way. Oh, by the way, I've been sober for 15 and a half years. It's my first time getting sober. It's a miracle. I have no idea why. November 10th, 2009 is my day. So 15 and a half years ago, that guy met me at that Carl's Jr. and he sent me to a meeting at Ohio Street in West LA. And he called the dude beforehand. And he's like, Eddie, this dude's coming. Give him a big book and a meeting directory. And Eddie was there. And when he walked in, he's like, hey, man, Doug's friend. Yeah, yeah, here you go. Here's the big book. Here's the meetings that we go to. I'll be at this one tomorrow. Meet me there. And I was like, okay. And I remember, again, saying okay, but not wanting to say those words. I was like, why are you saying okay? You don't want to do this. And maybe I was just powerless just because, I don't know, maybe there was some intervention. Maybe it was a divine one. Maybe it was because I said God. I don't know. I don't care, but I did say okay, and I met him at that meeting the next day, and I've been sober since that meeting. Now, I have no idea why. I think it was just because I was desperate enough to do something different. You know, I had those voices in my head that were not only telling me that I was nothing, but it was like, you know what, maybe killing yourself would be a good option. I was in that place. I think that we all get to. I think that we never ever make the decision to get sober and stay sober until we get there. Of like, I've got no other options. It's like Roberto was talking about. It's like, I always had that thing. Maybe I can make it work. I know in my soul that I have to have some sort of solution in my life. And that one wasn't working anymore. So I started going to meetings and I started listening to people at lecterns and podiums all over Los Angeles. And I started, you know, work a program and like, and all the stuff. I remember shuffling into my first meeting at Ohio Street and I sat in the back with my face up against the bricks because they were cool and I didn't really want to be there and I hated it. I hated it. I was the worst, most angriest newcomer. I was just bitter angry. Hoodie on, pea coat, shuffling in. Don't touch my hand. I don't want your number. No, you can't have mine. Don't talk to me. I was looking at people's shoes. I didn't want any part of this. I was pissed, so pissed. But there was coffee. And there was a cookie. That was good. Because I hadn't eaten in a long time. Just weighed myself this morning. I weigh 180 now. I was 135 then. Just shrunken up, nothing. I was maybe eating a happy meal a day. And so I started doing the things. You know, people in the meetings were laughing. People in the meetings were coming up to me like you guys did tonight and looked me in the eye and said, hey, thanks for coming in. Hey, how are you? My name's this. My name's that. How are you? And it had been so long since anybody had actually engaged me in that way. Like, I hadn't looked at anybody in a long time. I hadn't laughed in like a year. And I was like, oh, I'm in the world. There's people. Okay, this is different. This is weird. Okay, but I'm going to go with it. kind of shook me into reality for a second. And then something would say something at the meeting that would be just enough. It would be just a little kernel of like, oh, I get that. And then it got me to the next meeting. And then it got me to the next meeting. And then it got me to the next meeting. You know? And slowly, 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 things just started to get just a little bit better. Just enough to get me to one more day. I knew it was impossible. In my heart, I knew that this wasn't going to work. But there was just enough glimmer of light, just a little bit of hope, that if I went to the next meeting, I would feel a little bit better. And so I kept going to the meetings. And that's all I had to do for my first year. I didn't work. That's all I did. Just shook it out on my couch. Didn't go to rehab. Detoxed on my couch. I remember changing the cushions after. It was like a dead body line was there, you know, just sweat marks. Remember, I had no utilities left. The only thing I had left in my apartment was the gas, and I had a gas fireplace, and I would just light that thing and just watch it all night long. Just sweat it out. Go to the next meeting. And like I said, slowly things started to get just a little bit better. And I started going through the steps with that guy, Doug, who's still my sponsor today. He's a good man. He's going to be 35 years sober this year. And we started doing the things, you know. We read the book and did the writing. And I got to write myself down. I got to look at me. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm carrying all this stuff around with me. I'm carrying these resentments and fear and anger and problems with my sex life and all of this stuff. And I got to write it down and look at me. I was like, oh, that stuff's heavy. I'm carrying all this stuff with me all the time. It's like it was weighing on me, you know? And the only thing that worked for the longest time was getting loaded, but now I got to take a look at it, and I was like, oh, that's me. Oh, wait a minute. As a matter of fact, that's not me. That's just stuff that I made up. These are just lies that I've been telling myself over and over and over again based on experiences I had when I was a kid 20, 30 years ago. This is just stuff that I'm carrying around in my head that I'm still acting on and believing on. And so I got to share that stuff with somebody else and realize that that stuff is actually separate from me. That's not me. That's just lies, stories, thoughts, feelings, emotions, anger, all that stuff that I'm carrying around with me based on stuff that I made up. Like I tell some of the guys I sponsor, it's like burying a landmine and then going and jumping on it. I'm a self-destruction machine. This is what I do. This is what my mind was trained to do for decades, was to make up a lie, believe the lie, act on the lies, and then be pissed at the results. And it's all me. And I used to think that the world was doing that. And it was against me. It was me. It was me the whole time. So I, through this process, and I don't know where these guys came up with this stuff. I know it's based on all kinds of different religious teachings. I know it's based on slightly on Buddhism and spirituality and on and on and on. Thousands and thousands of years people have been doing this type of process. And they just put it in a form that I could understand, and I started doing it, and I was like, oh, I came to this realization that the answer lies within. Leads me to I'm fascinated with religion now and spiritual teachings and all kinds of stuff. And I'm still not a religion guy, but I think of like what Jesus said when he said, my Father and I are one, you know, and the kingdom of heaven is within and all of that stuff, you know, which means that, you know, when I first started trying to find my spirituality, I was desperate for a job, and this guy hired me to like help this guy make a podcast, and he was a religious scientist, and he wanted to record his sermons and put them on a website. And so I went and started talking to this guy, and as soon as we sat down, he started asking me questions. He's like, hey man, what's the most important moment in your life? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, it's this one. You only get this moment once. This is the only time that you live. This is the only time that you love. This is the only time that you can connect to anybody. This is the only time that you can be of service. This is the only time that you can be with God. Is right now, end of story, done. And that made a lot of sense to me. And he said, you know, that the through line of all religions and all spiritual teachings is that God, whatever that is infinite and omnipresent, which means he's endless and everywhere. That means he's right here. That means it includes you. You're not separate from anything. So no place can be holier than another place. A church is not holier than the Jack in the Box. It's the same. Heaven is wherever God is, and if God's everywhere, that's where we are. That means you're a part of that. And if the kingdom of heaven lies within, that means it's right in here, right inside me. That doesn't mean that I'm God, but I'm a tiny little piece of this giant machine that's working. This giant God. I can go deeper, farther into it. Now I think it's the quantum field. Now I think it's the universe. I mean, it could be a thousand different things. I'll never understand what it is. I'll have no idea. How could anyone understand what, you know, 13.8 billion years away looks like? I'll never understand it. And it's better that I don't, because my little pea brain mind will turn it into something self-serving. It'll turn it into something that my ego loves. I'm God. I can do whatever I want. Yeehaw! Yeah, as soon as I start defining whatever a God is for me, it gets bad. Because, you know, when I put my consciousness on me, the world is very small. It's just this. But when I can turn my consciousness around and look at everything, then my consciousness, me, I begin to get really big. I become as big as the universe. When I'm self-serving or self-seeking, I'm in pain. When I'm serving you, I'm in love. I don't know what's better than that. I don't know what's better than that. I didn't think that sobriety or getting sober or getting rid of drugs and alcohol or trying to be a decent guy was going to turn me into somebody that loves God. No way, man. No way. No way. And I'll never have an... I don't know what God is. I don't know what it is. You know, there's several hundred religions on the planet. I just happen to think it's the power of all things. Whatever happens when, you know, an egg is fertilized and that miracle of life happens, whatever that is, that's God. Remember when I was first seeking my spiritual solution to 2 minutes. I went in to hear a speaker and he talked about how he was comfortable in his own skin and that he could be okay and that he could breathe. And it felt like everybody in the room had disappeared, and it felt like he was talking just to me. And I felt for a second like I was out of the way and I was in the presence of something bigger than me. And I remember what that felt like, and it almost felt exactly like that first drink that I took. Because everything came into focus, everything slowed down, I could breathe, I could be okay here in the moment. And at that time, in hindsight, now I realize I understood what a sufficient substitute is. I have to have a sufficient substitute. And that sufficient substitute has to be as big and powerful and as loving as God. I said at the very beginning I had a romantic relationship with getting loaded. It was my love. It was my everything. My everything. More than family. So a sufficient substitute has to have that same gravity. I have to be in love with this. In love with it. Like it's my own family. Like it's my own child. When I wake up in the morning, I say, I love you. Thank you. Thank you so much for just one more day. And if that kingdom of heaven is in me, then that gratitude and love comes right back, flooding right back on me. What's better than that? I don't know. I don't know. I haven't found anything better yet. Well, there was that... Never mind. I was going to make a joke. No. There was that Brazilian girl I was dating. No, I'm just kidding. There's something that happened to me in here which is inexplicable, which is that I can walk around most of the time today and not only be okay, but kind of be in love with life. And I don't need to drink to do it. And it's way better. It's way better than anything that I did before. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.